Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man.
It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the fires, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
We are deeply shocked and deeply regretful about the results of last night's broadcast.
It is considered one of the most famous radio broadcasts in history. War of the Worlds, a radio drama adaptation of a science fiction novel by H.G. Wells. The show was performed live, on air, on radio, almost exactly 80 years ago. Did it really cause a mass panic? Or did the press, newspapers, try to build a bogus case against a relatively new and much more powerful medium? I'm Paul Cross. This is Cross Talk, Commentary and Analysis. October 30th, 1938. It's a Sunday. At 8 o'clock, stations connected with the CBS radio network air the Mercury Theater Hour. It's a weekly radio drama program starring the most famous radio voice of the day, Orson Welles.
You don't know that they're whether they're listening or not. You have no idea how many people are listening or what they're thinking. I had every hope that the people would be excited as they would be at a melodrama.
Still, the Mercury Theater was not making a huge impact with listeners just 4 months after its weekly broadcasts had started. 8 o'clock on Sunday night in 1938 is a tough spot. It's prime time for radio, and the main rival network, NBC, has the most popular show. The Chase and Sanborn Hour, hosted by Don Ameche. It stars comedian Edgar Bergen and his puppet, Charlie McCarthy. On this night, its guests include W.C. Fields and Dorothy L'Amour. That's important, and we'll return later to this point. Over at CBS, Wells and a near all-star cast come on the air to give a dramatic interpretation of a well-known novel published back in 1898. H.G. Wells imagines what might happen if Earth is invaded by Mars. Orson Welles has his writer tell the story as if it's being experienced and reported live on the radio. But if listeners think it's happening in real time, that's their mistake. It might be understandable how some listeners could make the mistake. The performances are remarkable. But there are many indications, including the actual announcements, that the show is fiction, radio drama. By my count, there are at least 26 indications in the first 39 minutes of the broadcast that this is drama. Some are blatant, some more subtle. I will examine the signs in the next episode of this series. For now, we start with the obvious, the beginning of the show.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and affiliated stations present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air in The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
One might also think listeners would recognize the voice of the lead actor, one of the most well-known voices of the day on radio, even as he plays the role of Professor Richard Pearson. It's obviously Orson Welles.
Professor Pearson, could this occurrence possibly have something to do with the disturbances observed on the planet Mars?
Hardly, Mr. Phillips. This is probably a meteorite of unusual size, and its arrival at this particular time is merely a coincidence. However, we shall conduct a search as soon as daylight permits.
In the early moments of the drama, Welles, in his other role in the play as the narrator, explains it was estimated by the Crossley Radio Service that on October 30th, 32 million people were listening to radio. There were fewer than 28 million radios in the U.S. in 1938. The population of the entire U.S. at the time, about 129 million. Depending which numbers you accept, it's estimated the Mercury Theater show has as little as a 2 share, perhaps a 4.7 share of the audience. That means for every person listening to radio at the time of the show, as few as something like 2 and 5 is tuned to War of the Worlds. Here's where the competing show on NBC becomes important. In the 1930s, radio listeners twisted and turned the dial the way people today flip through channels with a TV remote or swipe through playlists on a smartphone. Reporting from the day and a research study afterward suggests that at about 15 minutes after 8 o'clock on October 30th, many listeners started turning the tuning knob. The Chase and Sanborn Hour show, Comedy and Variety, had moved from Bergen's comedy into a song performed by a guest, Dorothy L'Amour. History would have us believe this is the moment when radio causes a mass panic. Listeners who tune over to CBS from NBC at about 8:15, when L'Amour starts singing, probably come into the War of the Worlds show around this point.
The top flew out there!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed. Wait a minute.
Someone calling someone
out,
or
something. I can see turning out of that black hole two luminous discs. The eyes, it might be a face, might be almost a... Good heavens, something wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Now it's another one and another one and another one. They look like tentacles to me. Oh, yeah, I can see the thing's body. Now it's large and... large as a bear. It glistens like wet leather, but that face, ladies and gentlemen, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it.
Even if this is the point at which a listener tunes in, there are at least 10 signs in the next 25 minutes before the station identification that this is not real. Most significantly, everything happens too fast. It is like a movie melodrama that Wells had hoped his show would be. Distances are covered in too little time. Armies amass and are wiped out in 30 seconds. The body of radio reporter Carl Phillips is identified at a hospital 4 minutes after his last report on air. And there's a formal station identification, announcement, and reminder this is a Mercury Theater presentation of a drama 40 minutes into the hour, followed by a reset of that announcement after a commercial. If listeners panicked, why? Certainly, there are records of hundreds of phone calls from listeners either frightened, confused, angry, even frantic, to CBS headquarters and CBS radio stations and to newspapers in Newark and New York and Boston. The Office for Radio Research, coincidentally located at Princeton University, launches a study within a week of the broadcast and a national survey through the American Institute for Public Opinion a few weeks later. 139 personal interviews are conducted, along with 920 long-form surveys. Shorter surveys are also done. The number is vague, but reported to be several thousand. Lead researcher Hadley Cantrill estimates that by later in the show, somewhere in the range of 6 million people are listening. The Institute for Public Opinion puts it up at 9 million. That would suggest a rise in share from 2 to 5% early in the show to about 7% during the show's portrayal of the Martian attack. Cantrill and his colleagues Hazel Gaudet and Herta Herzog estimate 1.7 million listeners think the attack is really happening. Perhaps 1.2 million people feel panic. As a student of radio, mass communication, media, I suggest reading Cantrill's report. Even his 40-page report, if not the full book, The Invasion from Mars. It has been too selectively quoted, used, and misused, in my opinion. The methodology is flawed. The timeline in interviews and surveys means some participants had been exposed to newspaper reporting about the panic before participating. Cantrill may have conflated the terms concerned or frightened with panicked, and the survey and questions set out to investigate panic. The social scientists use the term panic as if they already know it did indeed happen as panic. Still, the research stands as one of the few large-scale studies of the effects on human reaction by a live radio broadcast. Cantrill finds listeners who tune in late more likely to think it was real. Those with less education more likely to think it was real. Read Cantrill. Know what else he concludes? Radio is already so powerful because the public has an expectation that radio will bring the listener critical information. Remember, this is autumn 1938. It's only 1 month since radio bulletins on the Munich Conference when Hitler had annexed part of Czechoslovakia. There was the fear of the possibility of war. And, true, the actor Frank Reddick, portraying radio news reporter Carl Phillips, describing the opening of the Martian spaceship, he patterns his performance on the unfortunate performance just a year earlier of radio reporter Herb Morrison, watching the crash of the hydrogen airship Hindenburg, which most passengers survived.
It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the passengers screaming around here. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen.
As for War of the Worlds, on air, CBS concludes the broadcast with Orson Welles reminding listeners, there's no invasion, no Martians are here, this is a drama, it's Halloween. CBS airs at least four follow-up announcements through the evening because of the reaction it's getting. And next morning it stages what in those days was called a press conference, so newspaper reporters can fire questions at the director and star, Orson Welles. Many seem most eager to push the idea of whether Welles has created a false news broadcast to tell the story. Is this an unfair advantage over the listener, asks one reporter.
I don't believe that I have since. It is not a method original with me. It is used by many radio programs. I am terribly shocked by the effect it's had. I do not believe that the method is original with me or peculiar to the Mercury Theater's presentation.
And this from a reporter who thinks maybe he's got radio by the throat now. Radio, that nasty upstart taking away advertising dollars that might have gone to newspapers. Radio, upstaging newspapers because it can broadcast important events live and give immediate bulletins on dramatic life events like the Hindenburg and the Munich crisis. Will this event and the public reaction cause, to use the reporter's words, the curbing of radio bulletins on the air today?
I simply can't imagine. It seems to me that the effects of this will may cause much legislation. I simply don't know. The wisdom of radio executives and of an organized public will decide these things for us.
Hadley Cantrill finds in his research, radio is the medium par excellence for reporting news and public affairs. No, radio would not curb its reporting of news bulletins. And no, this broadcast, War of the Worlds, is not fake news. It's drama. It includes dramatization of reporting, just as movies and TV shows continue to do today. But they often use real news reporters and news hosts. The voices in War of the Worlds are all actors. War of the Worlds is brilliant radio drama. It's brilliant radio. Did it really cause panic? If it did, the newspapers missed it. There are more than 12,500 newspaper articles from the weeks following the broadcast. But where are the newspaper photos of panic, jammed highways, mass exodus? If Cantrill's numbers can be relied upon, less than 1% of the population felt any degree of panic while listening to a brilliant radio drama. Next time, the 26 signs, at least, that War of the Worlds is fiction. This is Cross Talk. I'm Paul Cross. I study and I teach radio.